This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Full 4 minutes ago, a surprise waddled into my life. I had forgotten that Stugatz was going to be in the studio because Stugatz has been in Bradenton, Florida, because the pandemic has swept all over Florida. I am presently doing this show wearing a mask. I'm hoping the audio's okay. I'm going to bring extra energy to everything we're doing. The mask is going to fog up my glasses. It's going to make it very hard for me to read much of anything. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Le Batard Show. Are your glasses fogging up because you're wearing a mask? Yes or no? So, a couple days ago, Stugatz, we had this great stat that Jerry Rice at 40 years old had 93 receptions, and the second and third place people with receptions in the history of football after the age of 40 were Tom Brady with one catch and Brett Favre with another.
Right.
And Peter Burns of ESPN threw out to his audience, give me your favorite sports stat. Give me the one that blows people away. Like two of my favorites are Wilt Chamberlain never fouling out of a game or Larry Fitzgerald having more tackles than dropped passes
sure.
in his career. Do you have any off of the top of your head? Because I'm going to read some that were sent in to him by people.
Besides rings plus minus, put LeBron's rings in a box and put Michael's rings in a box and Michael's plus three.
Well, you did what Keith Olbermann did, which is you made that question about you. So Keith Olbermann, his stat is that Bob Costas has attended zero no-hitters and that he, too, has attended zero no-hitters, but he had to leave two no-hitters, both after two innings. It must make him insane that the only Marlins game I went to in about 5 years was a late decision to take my father to his birth for his birthday to see Anibal Sanchez throw a no-hitter in front of 12 people at a football stadium. But here are some stats being sent in by a variety of people. Dan Shulman, Tony Gwynn hit 394 with three strikeouts in 270 plate appearances against Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, and John Smoltz. So the best staff of his generation, he hit 394 and struck out three times in 270 plate appearances.
They don't make them like Tony Gwynn anymore, man.
As you said, yes. Yeah. Walter Jones has as many Pro Bowl selections as holding penalties in his entire career. Peyton Manning's longest run in the NFL was 33 yards. Trent Richardson's was 32. So I want you to imagine the beating that Trent Richardson took across college and the pros, and the most space he ever had was basically three first downs. It was 32 yards for Trent Richardson.
Can you be one of the voices of baseball if you've never been to a no-hitter? I mean, I don't want to come after anyone's credentials here, but go to the park. You know what I mean? You go to the park enough, you'll see no-hitters. Billy Gill over here has seen two no-hitters, all right? And I'm no Keith Olbermann, all right?
It's a good question. I mean, probably put it on the poll, no? Can you be a baseball expert without without attending a no-hitter?
Forgive me for a second. Mike Ryan is telling us something here. Visually, but I don't know.
Stugatz, please mute your Zoom mic.
Okay.
Go through this every time. There we go. We're doing a horrible echo.
Sorry. Enjoy that Zoom window again for a second consecutive day. And you look terrible and stressed out. I
mean, yeah, you're the reason for it, pal.
Thanks.
All right. So what's going on with you two? Because Stugatz has just begun the rubbing of the arms portion of his
Bold.
Soothing when he gets uncomfortable. In almost 7,000 plate appearances, Joey Votto has popped out to the infield eight times. This is a pretty good one right here. More people have walked on the moon that have scored an earned run against Mariano Rivera in the postseason.
Mo.
Billy, what were the two no-hitters you attended? Did you get an A.J. Burnett no-hitter?
No. That was, I think, in like San Diego or something. More people have walked on the moon, by the way, than no-hitters Keith Olbermann and Bob Costas have seen combined.
How's
that for a stat? I saw Edinson Volquez's, who could forget that no-hitter, on Bark at the Park a couple years ago. And, Dan, here's the thing about that no-hitter. After like the first or second out in the first inning, he twisted his ankle and they were going to take him out of the game. And guess what? He powered through it. No-hitter. Game of his life. The other one was Henderson Alvarez. That was a weird one because that no-hitter ended in walk-off fashion with Henderson Alvarez in the on-deck circle, and a pass ball got by and someone came scampering home to score the only run of the game in true Marlins fashion.
Billy, you really have attended two of the worst no-hitters ever. I didn't even know there was much of a that was a thing, but those two names that you threw out with your no-hitters are not exactly the ones you're going to pass down to your grandchildren.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair. As a lifelong baseball fan, when I saw the no-hitter of Henderson Alvarez, I did kind of, especially with the way that it ended, I did kind of think, I can say I went to a no-hitter, but is this the one that I want to say that I went? And then Edinson Volquez gave me a gem. Now, you say forgettable. I remember it, Dan, as I said, Bark at the Park that day. Also, there was pet adoptions outside, and I almost adopted a dog and named it after Edinson Volquez just so that I would remember the day forever, but I didn't.
Dan, since Roy's internet died on him, I'm going to bring in a hockey stat that's pretty cool. Wayne Gretzky would still be the all-time points leader if you subtracted all of his goals.
That's pretty good. That is pretty good. Now, Roy has disappeared. As you know, we have had a hodgepodge of difficulties here. Billy is in Mike's seat. Mike is in Jacksonville in a hotel room, really frustrated with Stugatz. And so
supposed to be parts unknown.
Why? Well, I thought we were allowed to say today where you are. You're still not allowed to say where you are. I thought you were ready to say where you are.
I'm in Jacksonville.
You're not going to say what you're doing in Jacksonville? You're just going to leave it unstated?
Yeah, I'd prefer to. I'm really wearing yesterday's Stugatz experience on my face. Y'all can see it, right?
Yeah. You seem crazed.
Yep.
You seem crazed, manic, rage-filled. You look a little bit like Nicolas Cage in that movie where he'd ride a motorcycle and go on fire. Whatever.
Ghost Rider?
Of course he knew that.
But you look somewhere like that. You look like you're in mid-morph on going from being Nicolas Cage to being your full body on fire on a motorcycle.
So Mike has every right to be upset with me, to be frustrated with me. I looked through my notes last night. He keeps telling me to tighten it up. I wish he would use some other way to describe how I should operate moving forward, but he keeps saying tighten it up. And Mike, all I can do is offer you not a private apology, an on-air apology. Now, I can come back and fight it a couple of different ways, but I'm not going to do that. I am trying to grow as a person as I get closer to 50. And what I am going to say is I will own it. Despite the conversation we had at my house a couple of weeks ago, I will own the despite the fact I put in the calendar under my individual calendar and not under the group calendar. Here,
the qualifiers, okay. You said you weren't going to give
doing
us.
It. He could do it. Yeah. He was not doing it.
I am just pointing those things out, and then I am issuing a national public apology to you, Mike Ryan. I was wrong yesterday. You were right. And I will tighten it up moving forward. Okay?
I appreciate your apology. I will also go out of my way to not mention the fact that our conversation did not have any sort of certainty attached to it and happened before you sent an email saying all your July events were canceled. I also will not mention that and humbly accept your apology and commitment to tighten it the hell up.
All right, and I accept your apology. I mean, it's very nice of you.
Seems like there was very little growth on either end there, Dan.
They're just entrenched on their sides. You have noticed perhaps that is a formula that's being repeated all across America right now. Stugatz, if you don't know what they were talking about, Stugatz created an avalanche of lies where he was trying to get out of work yesterday, and he ended up getting a half day out of it. So perfect work for him in that he worked for 90 minutes and billed ESPN for a trip he took to Bradenton, where he might be getting me and Billy sick just to make this more difficult than it already is.
He's the only one without a mask on right now.
Yeah, well, I'm talking on the air. I mean, I don't know what you want me to do. Listen, I am telling you right now, okay, first off, I will not charge ESPN trying to grow as a person as I get closer to 50. But I'm going to get tested again because I am telling you, in Central Florida, in Bradenton, in that area, and the WNBA is right there, no one is paying attention to anything.
Oh, we've got to talk about all this.
Nobody.
Because the bubble's already contaminated. They're giving out Ja Rule sandwiches in a box. Yes, they're just giving out these terrible sandwiches that are just profoundly sad. But there is some good news today for you justice seekers. The FBI has finally ensnared Ghislaine Maxwell, the accomplice to Jeffrey Epstein and all of his issues with pedophilia and his mysterious death that some people don't believe was actually a suicide in a prison where there are never any suicides. And I got to think we got to keep this woman alive, people, to find out what she knows about people above Jeffrey Epstein who may have been doing stuff like this. I actually am fascinated by whether or not, because I've been wondering for a while why this woman wasn't under custody when she was obviously aiding and abetting in multiple reports what it is that Jeffrey Epstein was doing in procuring girls. But I do believe the audience would say if this climbs up higher than her, they might give her immunity to see what it is that she says. She might already be working with federal prosecutors because it's been weirdly mysterious that she hasn't already been in custody.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Today on ESPN Daily, with NBA rosters taking shape, players are headed to Orlando. Pablo Torre breaks down how the restart will work and some upcoming changes to the podcast itself. That's ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon. These days, we have to travel smart. Marathon can help by improving engine performance with quality top-tier gasoline. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily with new host Pablo Torre, wherever you enjoy your podcast.
Mina Kimes, among the guests that we're having today, Warren G is going to be on with us as well. Stugat says, you talk about some of the things happening in Florida.
Yeah.
As sports try to resume in Florida, I want to say some things on the front end of this to reveal sort of what my biases are, okay? I root for sports to happen. Sports is something that makes me do things out of character, like even want a ballpark built in Miami, even though it doesn't support baseball with taxpayer money, based on the emotional instead of the rational. It's basically a single issue vote that I vote on because it helps me. It's a selfish
right.
Way to do it. So I want to tell you on the front end that obviously the return of sports is something that we want around here. And I say that as someone who believes that our show is perfectly equipped to not have sports for many, many months and not need sports in order to find three hours worth of stuff to throw feces at each other about every day. But all of that said, okay, I cannot imagine, Stugatz, the undertaking right now that is our company trying to help MLS and the NBA get off the ground in this bubble as Florida becomes infected, as already MLS players are testing positive right and left, as basketball has all manner of fear about returning to some mutated, distorted season. All of this happening, and make no illusions about it, 100% because of money or the need for money.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sort of make the effort if you're business-minded, because this is the worst time in ESPN's history, Stugatz. I don't even know what's second. I really don't know in terms of a crisis, and we fall very low down on the list for people suffering through this crisis, but this is the absolute worst time in the history of ESPN. And here is ESPN with its parent company, Walt Disney, having all sorts of issues getting hit from every side. The cruise industry, the park industry. ESPN is a small business for Disney. ESPN for Disney is a small thing. We've summoned our uniquely qualified parent company to put sports in a bubble, and none of it feels right. None of it feels right. Like it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be cynical about it, because it's the easiest thing in the world to be a critic, right? As all the other people take the chances, as all the other people have the weight of the burden on their back, as all the other people have to make decisions about whether money's going to come in while we're still getting paid. I understand the conflict. And there are times that it's worth making and times that it's not worth making. For example, I would argue, and look, we're arguing about everything these days. We can't even decide what facts are. Masks have become a freedom issue. The president of the United States is saying Black Lives Matter is an expression of hate. Now, we've gone there. We can't agree on anything. Everything Yep. becomes an argument. But it is hard to argue right now. That sports should be coming back here, Stugatz, because of how unsafe it feels. What I can say is it should be coming back more than a Vanilla Ice concert, because Vanilla Ice is having a July 4th party.
No, he's not.
Yes, he is. He's having a July 4th concert.
But that's okay, Dan, because it's not a concert. It's at a restaurant that has a performance area. So it's really just like a dining experience. It's like he's like the violinist that comes to your table to play for you. Now, they're selling tickets, so it may seem like a concert. But it's not a concert, Dan, because, again, it's a restaurant.
I want all those things. I want sports. I love sports. I understand the need for sports. I am telling you guys, having just experienced the area where they're sending some of these athletes, it's bad up there. It grows rapidly. It's growing rapidly in the state of Florida. And Dan is right. We probably shouldn't be doing this. I think it's easier to offer up an explanation as to why we shouldn't be doing it than why we should be doing
it. And it's harder to do it than it is to complain about it being done. But I just don't think there's any dispute. I really don't. No matter what you're arguing about, that the whole thing feels unsafe. Like, I think we could say that without anything in the way of disagreement.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W-30. Here's your SportsCenter update. Jonathan Irons, the man that Maya Moore sought to regain his freedom after serving 22 years of a 50-year sentence for crimes he didn't commit, was released from prison yesterday. Adweek reports that Nike, FedEx, and PepsiCo have each received letters signed by 87 investment firms and shareholders worth a combined $620 billion, asking the companies to sever ties with the NFL's professional football team in Washington, D.C., until they change their nickname. And finally, the Board of Health in Knox County, Tennessee, voted Wednesday to mandate masks for anyone inside certain buildings. The vote was one shy of being unanimous, but that dissenter, Mayor Glenn Jacobs, who spent the majority of his professional wrestling career with the WWE under the stage name Kane, wearing a mask. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So Tom Juneau is one of the best writers of my life, not just magazine writers, just when this guy writes about stuff.
I'll take your word on it.
I know you will not read anything that he has written, but basically all the stuff that has happened. What do you mean it's not fair?
It's not just Tom, it's anyone.
I know, it's not just Tom. But all that stuff that you saw in the movies with Mr. Rogers, and we've really made Tom Hanks angry, by the way. He's out here saying, don't be a P-word, wear a mask.
What?
That's Tom Hanks.
Oh, boy.
He's lost his mind. But all that stuff you read about Mr. Rogers or you saw in the movies about Mr. Rogers, it started with Tom Juneau, I think a professed agnostic, being so moved by his fundamental decency that it felt a little bit like being touched by spirituality, touched by God, because he was such a kind man. So now Tom Juneau has worked for 2 years on a story that's going to air next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Tom, thank you for joining us. First of all, explain to us why you would invest 2 years of your talent in one story that was not a book or a project bigger than this.
Well, it was one of those stories that seemed to have, like, everything in it. You know, I mean, that, you know, as soon as the person who heard about it was my wife, Janet. She said, "Did you see about this story about this guy in Maine?" And I was like, "No." She said, "Well, you should look at it because it's right up your alley." So she knows me. And really, the idea of, I'd like to explain the story right now. So the story is about a guy who is killed at a baseball field, at a Babe Ruth League game. A woman who is in the middle of a psychotic episode drives her car into the field. She drives around. It's very crowded. There's a lot of people who think that they're going to die that night. She kills, out of 200 people on hand, she hits and kills one guy by the name of Doug Parkhurst. For a day, he's a hero, and then it comes out that 50 years earlier, he killed a little girl in a hit-and-run accident that he kept secret for decades. And so his secret is exposed. His heroism is, to say the least, called into question. And, you know, the cosmic wheel seems to turn, basically. I mean, you know, with Fred Rogers, you know, I found a spirituality through kindness. But the universe that's, like, in this story is a little bit harsher and a little bit more judgmental. And, you know, people talk about karma. They talk about poetic justice. They talk about a lot of things. And this story's got it all.
What did you learn? Again, the hero of Goodall Park. It is Goodall, right? That's how it's pronounced?
Yeah, Goodall Park, yeah.
The hero of Goodall Park airs next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Well, what did you learn? Because usually when you invest this much time in something, somebody with your brain power is going to do a lot of learning.
Well, I mean, I think I learned a lot of things as far as, like, life lessons. There's, like, don't keep a secret because it destroys everybody. I mean, this guy Doug Parkhurst thought he got away with it. But he actually, you know, he destroyed the family of the little girl who never knew who killed this little girl named Carolee Ashby. But he destroyed his own family as well. Everybody in this story. And this guy, so in 1968, he's 18 years old. It's Halloween night. He's driving drunk with his brother and passed out in the backseat through Fulton, New York. There's a girl whose birthday it is. She's taking her little sister across the highway. He hits the little girl. He keeps on going. That decision, you know, just kind of resonates for the next 50 years through the lives of, like, three families. It's one decision, but it affects everybody. And that's what I learned. I mean, you think you get away with something, you don't get away with something.
Tom, what's the longest amount of time that you've invested in a story? Is this it? And if so, what would be second place?
Well, I'm writing a book about my dad that I started in 2015, so I'm still a long way from finishing. So I guess I've gotten used to it. But, you know, I've never really invested this amount of time in a magazine story. I mean, I've done stories that have taken me 4, 5, even 6 months. But 2 years, a little bit different. But I think that the difference in this is also that I've been working with Martin Kotabashian and ESPN's E60. So there's two things that are coming out. I got there's a 15,000-word print piece, Stugat, you know, wow. So that you can, it's just there waiting for you. It's going to be coming out, I guess, on Monday or Tuesday. But it was cut down.
That's called a book to me.
30,000 words. Yeah, right. And then there's the television piece, and this is the first TV documentary that I've ever worked on. And so I'm, you know, pretty charged up about it. And that's one of the reasons why it took so long.
The Hero of Goodall Park airs next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And for those who are unfamiliar with the story or just joining us, How did the secret unravel? Like, what were the particulars that made this come apart? And how much haunting was there in keeping the secret before it actually became open knowledge?
Yeah, that's a great question. So 18-year-old Douglas Parkhurst kills a little girl and drives away. 45, during that whole time, because the Carol Lee Ashby was holding the hand of her 15-year-old sister, Darlene. Darlene is walking across the road. She says that she feels a tug. She looks down. Her hand is empty. Her little sister is 130 feet down the road, is the sequence of it. So she is haunted, you know, every day of her life. There's not a moment in her life where she doesn't feel, you know, the emptiness of the hand that was holding her sister's hand. But the other thing that haunts her is that she's always wondering, whenever she meets people, do they know? Do they know who the person is? Like, even her friend, she was like, maybe somebody's got to know who did this. And, you know, she turned out to be right. 45 years after the incident, she gets a note through a Facebook direct mail of a person that she knew back in Fulton, New York at the time, who was asked to provide an alibi for Doug Parkhurst by Doug Parkhurst's family. And so she lived with that for 45 years. And so she finally tells Ruby, she finally tells Darlene, and Darlene goes to the police and they start their investigation. And I've also gotten to know those two policemen, you know, quite well. And they were just dogged. They were amazing.
Why did she hold on to it for 45 years? And what after 45 years made her go a different direction?
She was afraid. I mean, flat out. I mean, she was afraid. She was a kid. There was a point where one of the guy who was in the backseat of the car is Lenny Parkhurst. It's Doug Parker's brother. He tells her that the car that killed Carol Lee Ashby was a 62 Buick Special. I mean, this is like right out of Stephen King. It's like Christine. But he tells her that they still have the car. And do you want to go, you know, the car is buried in a place where it will never be found. And do you want to come and see it? And she hears that and she says, if I go to see that car, I'm never going to come back. So she gets scared, basically, is what happens. What happened was that this was a closed case, you know, for a long time. It got reopened in 2000 by a policeman, a detective, who could never break it, but was haunted by it. And when he retired, he put a message on a Fulton, New York memories site. It was called Fulton Memories. And he said, you know, speaking of Fulton Memories, does anybody have any information about the death of Carol Lee Ashby, which was legendary in Fulton? It was like this case that, you know, kids went out on Halloween night. It was like, don't end up like the little girl who died on Halloween 1968. It was like a ghost story for Fulton, New York. And she finally came out and decided to say something.
He does really good work. Check out some of it next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, ESPN. Tom Juneau, the hero of Goodall Park. Thank you for being on with us, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance.
Tommy Tuberville's bus caught on fire. What? Tommy Tuberville, the former Auburn coach, has a tour bus because he is now a political candidate.
Is he okay?
Right? Yeah.
Yes, everyone is okay.
Okay, good.
A tour bus, the Tommy Tuberville tour bus. Go ahead and put it on the poll. Is there anyone in sports whose name sounds more like the name of a cartoon train than Tommy Tuberville? Because his bus caught fire, and I feel like that's a symbol right now for everything happening in America. He is on a tour bus, the people versus the swamp, and this cartoon character named Tommy Tuberville, not even he can avoid his bus going up in flames.
I like the train being named Tommy, and it's headed to a place called Tuberville. I mean, that's what I like.
Oh, that's what you prefer? Yes. You prefer? All right, put that on the poll as well then, at Lebatard Show. Or is it that his name is Tommy and he is headed to a place called Tuberville, yes or no. Was Antonio Brown wearing that Raiders helmet that was the subject of much controversy when he was running routes with Russell Wilson? Oh, look, we got our first smile from Mike Ryan in an hour of just seething at Stugat.
Wow.
For an avalanche of lies. Did you notice, Mike? Is it you bought for how much did you buy? What did you buy the Antonio Brown memorabilia? You bought a jersey, the Raiders jersey?
Yeah, pennies on the dollar. I think like $30. I got an autographed Raiders Antonio Brown jersey. It's a conversation piece.
It's a bargain. It really is a bargain. But was he wearing that controversial helmet while running routes with Russell Wilson? Because I do love the idea, and I'm good with this if it happens for the remainder of all of our lives, where every couple of months you just see Antonio Brown offering you the promise of maybe one day catching 80-yard passes for your team, but never actually doing it. Like just working with Russell Wilson just enough to make people excited that Seattle's the team that's going to take the risk.
This is somewhat related, but not entirely related. Am I the only one that was confused? So Russell Wilson's handle, I believe, is Danger Russ and then like a number, right? And for the longest time, I couldn't figure out that it's because it's dangerous.
Really?
Right?
You didn't know that?
No, I was like...
What did you think it was?
What did you think it was?
I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, why is his name Danger? Like, what's going on there? Is he like trying to seem like a bad boy? Because Danger Russ doesn't seem like someone that gets into many Danger Russ situations, right? Like... Danger Russ seems like he's pretty, like, you
you're
know,
right.
Safe,
he's against safe danger. Russ. You're so right about this. Danger Russ seems like he's against danger.
Should be Ranger Russ.
That works.
Yes.
I could see Danger Russ wearing a Ranger Russ uniform working in a national park.
Ranger Russ.
Yes.
You know what? Yeah. The thing that's puzzling about Danger Russ or Ranger Russ is that his style of play is absolutely Danger Russ, but his personality is absolutely Ranger Russ.
Strange.
It is.
Just based on personality, would you guess NFL quarterback, one of the all-time greats, or park ranger?
Yeah, I don't know. On personality alone, we know the answer to that. It's absolutely Ranger Russ.
He's very high on my list of athletes who are probably also an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, he's absolutely wearing a ridiculous hat while telling you that you cannot walk on that particular batch of petunias. You need to stay on the other side of the ropes. And he says it very politely while wearing a brown hat that has some sort of leather strap on it. It's so true. You never want him as your quarterback, and you don't want to see him either at the park.